Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Rob, who is the CEO of Technology Advice. Rob, thank you so much for joining me today.
Mason, it's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
I am really excited to dig into it because there's a couple of content syndication companies out there, but I think the Technology Advice, in my mind, has really got the market cornered on specifically working with a lot of B2B SaaS companies on content syndication in such a way that is not just mass market and like getting tons and tons of contact information, but like more specifically great content that actually leads to a pipeline and a great ROI from an efficiency perspective. So I'm excited to dig into it and talk through how you think about content syndication in the context of an ABM program. So I'm curious, as you're working with customers and you've helped, I mean, obviously very successful business around it, where are you seeing most people should get started from an audience perspective on content syndication?
If you're just getting started for the first time, I think it's really important to understand the types of audiences that you have success with your product first and foremost. And when you're looking at a potential partner, a publishing partner, a content syndication partner, understanding what are the audiences that they have, who are their first party audiences, and to what degree have they built trust with those audiences? Okay, so right now in the environment that we're in right now, there are a lot of publishers, there are a lot of content syndication companies that have first party audiences, but they don't go very far. Like the level of trust doesn't go very deep. And to be honest, years ago, we struggled with this as well, where the conversations that we were having with our audiences, whether digitally or offline via telephone or whatnot, were very transactional in nature. And so, you know, as we've built a greater volume of first party audiences across 30 different digital media brands that we operate today, we found the importance of the depth of trust, the frequency of engagement, and that goes a really long way into driving real results for our customers. I'll give you an example. We've got about 50 different email newsletters that we publish, some on a daily basis, some on a weekly basis, a few on a monthly basis. If our newsletter recipients don't receive a newsletter in their inbox in the morning, they're messaging us and saying, guys, what's wrong? I haven't received my daily newsletter yet, right? That's the level of interest, excitement, and trust that we've built with these audiences through publishing really high quality content consistently over many months and many years. And that's the type of audience that you want to get your product in front of, a product that can be positioned in a way that, you know, feels a lot more authentic. Authenticity is a really big part of the equation today as well.
The simple framing of, yeah, there's a lot of people that can boast a large email list. It's not that crazy difficult to get an email list today. You can just go get a list out of ZoomInfo and start emailing people. And we'll not get into the legality of some of that, but in short, like your ability to build an ongoing trust with these customers and these audiences is exactly why people would actually want to explore content syndication. So I am curious, you just alluded to it, of like it's something that you guys have been really intentional to build over the past few years. How, as a customer, would somebody be able to look at their audience that they're trying to get in front of and then validate, all right, this content syndication partner has a trusted audience in this specific space?
You have to start with the audience in mind, right? So put yourself in the shoes of your buyer and go and look at, subscribe to that email newsletter, subscribe to that social media channel, watch the videos that are being published on YouTube. What is engaging to you? In the shoes of your buyer, what is interesting, engaging, educational? What is a good use of your time? What comes across as authentic? I think going and finding the content that connects with your potential buyer is the right way to evaluate a potential content syndication or publishing partner.
I love it. So we've made sure we've got a great audience that actually, through the partner, we're able to see, okay, they actually do create engaging content that is super value added and has great audience engagement. I'm then curious to think through, how do you think about the different channels in which someone could syndicate content and making sure that that's the right channel mix for their program?
That's a question we get quite a bit from our customers. And to be honest, I don't have the best answer for that. I think there's not any one channel that you need to pay attention to more than others. I can't make a blanket statement that's applicable to every member of your audience, Mason. You know, you have to look at what's working for your buyer, right? Where are your buyers consuming content? Is it video? Is it events? Are they speaking to experts on the phone? Is it an email newsletter? Is it social? Chances are it's like all of those things, right? Yeah. So instead of paying attention to the channel that you're syndicating on, I encourage people to experiment with a lot of channels, or leave it up to us as a publishing partner, as a content syndication partner, leave it up to us to help you understand what that looks like with our first party channels and how that may differ from other groups that you're working with. One of the things that we like to encourage customers to focus on is really less about the channel and more about the quality of the content. So we speak about this and say a lot of times here internally, it's not good enough to be good enough. You can't just provide a mediocre content consumption experience for the audience anymore. There's four ingredients that you have to be really successful with your content syndication or any content marketing efforts. Number one, and the most obvious one, is the content has to be educational. Most people stop there. If the content is highly technical or educational, that's table stakes, okay? But today, you also have to apply three other ingredients. It has to have high production value. It has to be a good use of the audience's time. And it also, I think, my opinion is that it has to have some form of entertainment that comes to it, which really builds a lot of authenticity with the audience. So let me expand on those a little bit briefly. High production value. It's so easy to build a high production value experience with your content. It goes a long way in building trust with the audience. It shows that you care, right? And let's use your studio, for example, right? You have an amazing mic. You've got the scrappy ABM branding on your hat. You've got the great sign. You've got lighting. It wasn't rocket science to figure that out. But you do it one time, and it shows that you really care about providing a good experience as somebody is consuming this content that we're creating today together. It goes a little bit further than some people take it today, but it's so important. It builds trust with the audience immediately, right? If you showed up and, you know, your lighting as the interviewer looked like maybe more like my lighting here in my office, Maybe you don't come across as trustworthy, for example. A good use of the audience's time. So we talk about a 30-second reader, a 3-minute reader, or a 30-minute reader. So depending on what you're selling, is it a topic that people want to spend 30 seconds making a decision on or a judgment call on? Is it a 3-minute decision or is it a 30-minute decision? Dependent on what you're selling, but also who you're selling to and which part of the buying committee, which member of the buying committee you're selling to, right? So if you have a more complex sell and you have 10 different people involved in the buying process for your solution, some of those members of that buying committee may be 30-minute readers. You know, they may want to consume a long-form, in-depth, technical piece of content. You may have other people that want to just get, you know, the most brief version of their questions answered and 30 seconds or 3 minutes. And so you need to think about that too. Make sure that it's a good use of time. There's not a lot of dead space in the content. So I'm assuming, you know, in the form, like in this podcast, you will clip, you will make cuts. So it's speedy, it's punchy, you're getting the information that people need, and they don't feel compelled to raise us up to 2x speed to make a good use of their time. Do you do that, Mason? Do you find that sometimes you watch video content and it needs to go to 2 or 3x speed? I'm usually 1.5x speed guy myself.
I'm in psychopath a little bit because I actually speak really fast almost all the time. So I will almost always listen to something on 2x speed, if not 2.5. And some of our team members think I'm truly insane. But I get the content, I get the information, and then we just keep rolling.
And I speak a little slower than you. So maybe your editor will speed me up to match your speed. We'll see what they can do. And then the last thing is entertaining. So I started with the first piece that people really think about, especially B2B marketers, educational, right? High production value, good use of the audience's time. I see a lot of our customers thinking about this. The fourth ingredient that I see the fewest amount of our customers talking about is the entertaining element. So building authenticity, building a little bit of humor. There's some really great case studies out there with brands that are doing this and kind of bridging this gap of making B2B content feel a lot more like B2C content in this manner. But look, we're all people at the end of the day. People buy from people. People are selling to people. And so if you can bring in that personal element and make it feel more authentic, whether it's through entertainment or otherwise, that is a fourth ingredient that we see driving a lot of success with the most compelling content that we're putting in front of our audiences today.
I love the simplicity and the ways in which to approach content. And again, you guys are doing quite a bit of content syndication. So I'm sure as we look at the analytics across which customers are the highest performing, they have educational content that has a high production value that is entertaining in and of itself and is worth the reader's time, and has also been viewed through the lens of how much time should this take based on who our intended audience is. Like, again, I keep thinking about, we send over massive ABM strategy documentation, but we always do a 5-minute video overview for the CEO or the CMO just to make sure that they've got a summarized version. But then for our, you know, director of demand gen that we're working with, it's a 3-hour read like you referenced. And then for individual team members, there's some 30-minute readers in there. So just even thinking about that, not just in content syndication, but also internal documentation, like everything that you want to create for content, like how do you make it have the 30-33? So like 30-second, 30-minute, 3-hour. I think that's a really helpful breakdown.
Yeah, and you can see this in a lot of the articles that we write and publish on our websites. You know, there's a synopsis or a short version of the conclusion that we will stick right at the top of the article a lot of times. We'll say, hey, look, do you want just our bottom line recommendation for this topic? Here it is. Now, if you want to keep reading and get all the details, here's, you know, a table of contents, or here's the entire article that you can go through for 30 minutes.
I love it.
Yeah. And Mason, the last point I'll make on this topic is, when you think about these four ingredients, I use the analogy of, it's like a table lamp. If you think about a simple table lamp, you need four ingredients for that lamp to produce light. You need the lamp itself. You need a light bulb. You need an electrical service, and you need somebody to turn it on. If you do three of those things really well, but you're missing the fourth ingredient, that lamp has zero light. It doesn't have 50% light or 75% light. You go from zero to 100% light when you have all four of those ingredients that I mentioned. Okay, I believe the same thing is true with content. And we see it. We see it with our customers. When the content has high production value, it's a great use of the audience's time, it's entertaining or authentic, and of course, it's educational. When all four of those things are present, that's the highest ROI content that our customers are publishing and syndicating to our audiences.
I think that's a perfect segue into thinking about measurement. And I know that there's a ton of ways that you could measure success on content syndication. Before digging into some of the best practices around successful measurement, I am curious, where do you see a lot of people getting measurement incorrect?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. And in fact, I've got a few good examples on that. So we recently were working with a large laptop manufacturer, and we were working with their small business division to help drive sales, publishing content, and drive sales of laptops. They're targeting companies with about 50 or fewer employees. The sales cycle in a 50-person company is very short. They're making decisions on equipment purchases in a matter of days, maybe weeks. Okay. And so with that program, we worked with the customer to identify and measure both leading and lagging indicators so we could understand and pivot strategy very quickly across different segments of our audience, based on what those leading indicators were showing, and of course, eventually the lagging indicators. But the feedback, the timeliness of the feedback loop was varied, right? So if we tried a new piece of content, a new messaging, aligned a certain messaging to one of our brands, we were getting feedback in days on those leading indicators, right? Now, we then started working with their mid-market division. Mid-market buyers were targeting companies that are, you know, 250 up to 2,500 employees. Those businesses make purchasing decisions very differently, right? The buying cycle is larger. There's a lot more people involved in the process. They want to consider a lot more alternatives. And instead of days or weeks, they're making purchasing decisions in weeks, months, maybe quarters. It's also very difficult to displace an existing vendor with these companies, right? So if you're trying to fight out an incumbent, you've got to do a lot of different messaging there. And there's some different like leading indicators to pay attention to there as well. So one of the things that we saw the customer do is try to apply the conversion funnel metrics with the SMB customer to the mid-market endeavors and struggle with that, right? Because you're not understanding the dynamics of who's involved in the purchasing process, what the lag time is, what are the additional concerns, and what are the things that you need to do to fight out an incumbent. Fighting out an incumbent in a mid-market customer or a larger enterprise customer is way more difficult than a small business customer, right? And so just considering those, I think, is important. The other thing I see, particularly with content syndication or other content marketing or any form of paid media, is paying attention to what is a statistically relevant sample size, right? When to have enough data to make a decision. And, you know, if you ask 10 different people this question, you're going to get 10 different answers. Everybody has an opinion that differs from the next one. But generally, I see people waiting too long to watch the leading indicators to adjust and pivot. And so we talk a lot about speed of the feedback that we're getting from customers. And speed doesn't mean that you're working a 12-hour day or you're working late nights to implement feedback from a customer. Speed means that we're taking in new information very quickly and adjusting our strategy very quickly as a result of it.
I couldn't agree more on just recognizing the nuances of like, well, what's the market we're going after? Because in your example, 50 or fewer, they may have an IT person that's involved in purchasing equipment, but certainly in the mid-market, like, you've now added more technical buyers into the equation because the organization has gotten to a size and scale where there's more technical complexities to just manage devices and make sure that like devices are locked down for company privacy. Like, those are just added layers that take longer because there's more scrutiny under any purchase, specifically the equipment that our teams are using. So that is pretty prevalent across like any purchase. As you go up market, there's more complexities and there's more people involved. So I love the call out of just, if you targeted one vertical or one size company and you change your targeting, like, you need to adjust and adapt. As a standard rule of thumb, I have sandbagged it hard and just done like a negative 10% on everything. I'm just like, this is going to take, like, our conversion is probably going to be 10% lower across the board. It's probably going to take 3 more months. And if we're still all happy with those numbers and results, they may end up being better. But at least for a starting point, like, let's have a really low expectation to get it started. And then, I mean, simply put, that's one of the benefits to paid media and like these kinds of programs, is there is relatively quicker feedback loops that you can see to make some pivots. And like, if you see, man, we've been running this for like a couple of weeks and there's zero engagement on it at all, something's wrong. Like, maybe our title was incorrect. Maybe the content itself isn't actually all that valuable as we thought it was. Like, you can make some relatively quick pivots as compared to potentially like organic social, where it just takes longer to get those feedback loops. So, Rubba, I'm curious, as we kind of round out, if somebody's trying to get started with some form of a content syndication program, like, is there any parting wisdom that you'd give them on how to get started effectively?
Yeah, I think, again, this kind of feeds into what we were talking about a few minutes ago, but make sure you have the measurement and the feedback loops in place. The timeliness of those is super important. Today, marketers are being pressured by boards, investors, CFOs to do more with less. And the way to do that is to watch your leading indicators and watch them very closely, very early, and again, have the feedback loop as tight as possible. You mentioned paid media a minute ago as well, Mason, and paid media is wonderful. And we advise a lot of customers and manage some paid media for customers as well. And we frequently are taking budget. And instead of, you know, if a customer has a $20,000 monthly budget for paid media and they want to spend it across 10 different strategies, so you know what, we're going to take those 10 strategies, but we're going to take them and divide each of them by 10 as well and use 10 different creatives for each of those 10 different strategies or 10 different audience segments within our audience across those as well. Instead of 10 $2,000 bets, we're going to place 100 $200 bets, because that is a statistically relevant enough sample size for your product sometimes, not always, but sometimes, depending on your ACV and other metrics, what you're selling. And so, yeah, I think the number one thing is to get feedback loops and measurement in place from the very beginning. Pay attention to them. Don't create any arbitrary timelines for yourself. Don't say, hey, we're going to go invest this money and we'll come back in 2 quarters and figure out if it worked. Like, look at the data. When you have enough statistically relevant data to make a decision and pivot, and you will iterate a lot faster, and you will bring that program to success and a great return on investment a lot faster as a result of it. The other thing that Mason, I don't know how you feel about me pitching a piece of our content, but we've created a piece of content, the top questions you need to ask a lead generation or publishing partner. And I'd be happy to provide that with you if it would be helpful, Mason. I believe it's a top 25 questions to ask. And it's dealing with things like audience capabilities, targeting capabilities, the level of service that is being offered. And we believe that, you know, getting to understand a partner and their audiences very intimately on the front end will pay dividends as you go along in your marketing journey.
I love it. Yeah, we'll drop that link in the show notes. Rob, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you or technology advice, where would you point?
Thank you, Mason. Thank you for having me. I'd love to engage with your audience further. If there's anything that we can be helpful with, you can find us at technologyadvice.com.
Well, again, Rob, thank you so much. This has been Scrappy AVM. We'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.